Hello once again, and welcome to Skulls Cast, episode 33. My name is Kaz.
This is Medibot.
And tonight we'll be... Medibot and I, excuse me, I have a... I seem to have a little bit of the Indian food that I had earlier caught in my throat here. It's a bout of deliciousness that is rising back up and frothing in a curried hurry.
If that lasts for more than 3 to 5 hours, consult a mortician.
Well, hopefully the cast will only last for about the hour that it truly should. And tonight we're doing a Magic the Gathering advanced level level system, advanced level cast about one format in particular.
What format is that, Kaz?
Well, formats in general means that, you know, it's constructed magic. You go and take cards that you have at home and put a deck together using rules of deck construction specific to the format. And tonight's format is Elder Dragon Highlander.
Highlander?
Yes, the original name for what is now known as Commander. It's a format where you have 100 card decks. They are singletons, so you cannot have any repeats except for basic lands. And there are lots of other rules as well that we will be getting into in detail. Not only are we going to tell you about the rules of Commander, but also what it is like to play in Commander, and some of the more important and less spoken of rules that Medibot and I are particularly adroit at engaging in and addressing. So you have two genuine experts on your hands and in your corner if you wish to venture into the world of Commander Magic. So why don't you give us a quick rules rundown, Medibot, for the rules of Commander that are not present in other versions of Magic.
Well, the big thing about the Commander format is that you pick a legendary creature, and that legendary creature is your master and commander.
Yes.
And you can pick any legendary creature you want, except for the ones that are banned.
There are some that are banned.
This format, like all constructed formats, has a ban list.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that at length, too.
Yes. And so step one is you pick your commander. You can pick any legendary creature you like. You can pick a powerful one, or a cool one, or a powerful and cool one, or one that is neither powerful nor cool by expressing your choices in this way. I've ensured that all creatures that are legendary and not banned can be chosen, so you pick that. And then you take a look at that commander, and you ask yourself, what colors are on my commander? And that determines the answer to that question is your commander's color identity.
That's right. Color identity as a concept in Magic dates back to Innistrad. Actually, they formalized it there. Prior to color identity being formalized, there was a casual understanding of color identity and what it meant.
So you get your general's color identity, and that's based on cost, and also colors in any... is it any monosymbol that appears in its text box?
In costs in its text box.
Costs in its text box. This is, of course, only for EDH color identity. This is not for normal rules of the game color identity.
Right.
This is mostly so that you're allowed to pick Memnarch.
Yeah, up until that point, until they formalized it to include abilities, there were four legendary creatures who, by the rules, could not be included in their own decks. So if you picked Daughter of Autumn, Rhys the Exiled, Memnarch, or Bosh Iron Golem, there was also Thelan of Havenwood. But now they've taken color identity to include the abilities, so Thelan is now a black-green deck, Rhys the Exiled is a black-green deck, Daughter of Autumn is a white-green deck, Memnarch is a blue deck, although I do believe he's banned. And Bosch Iron Golem is a red deck.
So then, you take that color identity, and then you start putting your deck together. And as Kat said, it's 100 cards, no repeats except basic lands. And the rules are, is that every card in your deck has to be within your commander's color identity. So, you know, if your commander's, you know, like, green-black, then every card in your deck must be green, black, and or black. It cannot have any colors that are not green or black.
Right.
I guess, is the actually fast way to put it. Because you're allowed to have colorless cards, that's A-okay. And I'm pretty sure that there's a rule in there that the basic land, and that, like, the rule is that you cannot have monosymbols on the cards that are not within your general's color identity, which
right.
means something
you
like
can't...
Obelisk of Alara can only be played in a 5-color deck.
Right. The monosymbols can't appear in either the costs or effects of abilities, but for the, like, two things that have color symbols in their reminder text, that doesn't count. Because reminder text is not rules text.
Reminder text is not rules text, and basically never matters unless you're playing with a certain subset of cards. So then you put your deck together. And, you know, you can think of... And when you're putting your deck together, you know, you have some big decisions to make here. And, you know, you just need to decide. And none of them are bad. What you can think is, you know... Do I want my commander to be the centerpiece of my deck? Do I want
well,
my deck
I mean,
to
we're,
be about...
We're still short a couple rules, aren't we?
Are we?
Oh, yes. For one, this is primarily a multiplayer format.
Oh, yeah.
And you start at 40 life.
Start at 40 life.
That's kind of a big thing.
Generally, you get one free mulligan, because your deck's
No. There are other mulligan rules.
Other mulligan rules?
Yeah, we've switched over to what's called Partial Paris.
Ooh.
Oh, yes.
How's that work?
Well, Partial Paris works by you shuffle up your deck and draw your opening 7 as normal. And then, as many times as you wish, you may put back some number of cards and draw that many. You know, or set aside some number of cards and draw that many. Okay? And every time you repeat this, you can... toss away and pull back one less than you did the last time. Or, at most, one less than you did the last time. So, if I draw my opening hand of 7, and I like 3 of the cards, I can toss back 4 and draw 4. And then, from that 7, I could toss back 3 and draw 3, and then 2 and 1. I could also do 4, 2, 1, and so on.
Partial Paris.
This lets you... I mean, honestly, I think it gives you a little more card selection than you really need.
Sometimes it'll really
in a lot of
let
cases.
You sculpt your opener, and in some decks that's kind of powerful. Also, you know, your general is a legendary creature who in all likelihood can attack and deal damage to your opponents.
Yes.
If at any time a player has taken 21 points of damage, combat or otherwise... from a single general, that player immediately dies.
No, I thought it was only combat damage.
Is it only combat damage?
It's only combat damage that does
21
that.
Points of combat damage from a single general, that player immediately dies.
Yes. So every general has, like, general poison.
Yes.
Kind of thing. So if somebody steals Medibot's commander and attacks me with it, then that accumulates on the previous total that Medibot had accumulated on.
It's still Medibot's general damage.
You can also be killed by your own general this way if someone steals your general and does that.
My right arm. Heavy.
Yes.
My
also,
left arm.
Also, if your general is a morph, and you morph the general, that morph will deal general damage. I don't agree with that one, but there you have it. That is how it works. And if your general becomes a copy of something that is also a creature, or, I guess, becomes a copy of something that can deal combat damage, because there's probably a situation where that might not be a creature. That would still be general damage. That is not a copyable value in that sense, so it doesn't get overwritten. And it can get a little weird, but don't worry about it too much.
Don't worry about it.
Just remember the 40 life and 21 general damage thing, and you'll be well on your way to building a deck.
Like Cass says, usually multiplayer, usually four specifically.
And do we tell them about the command zone?
Oh, right. Yeah, command zone. Okay. So you got your nice 100 cards put together.
Yes.
And we'll talk more about selecting those cards in a little bit. But you don't shuffle in your general. No, no, no. He, she, or it, or they sit in what's called the command zone. That's not in your library. It's a special zone. It is not an exile, which I think it technically used to be.
Yeah, it used to be exile before we got the command zone. Because there was a distinction between being exiled by something like Oblivion Ring and being exiled to the command zone, and it just got too much to keep track of. So they're like, you know what? There's another zone. It's only for generals.
It's only for generals. Basically, that's where you'll usually be casting your generals from. You just pay its mana cost and play it using all normal timing restrictions. Which, you know, if your general's Teferi, he's got flash. You can flash in. And whenever your general would be put into a graveyard or exile, you may instead put it into the command zone. Also, you know, this means that, you know, you play it and maybe it gets murdered, and so you're like, I don't want it in the graveyard, I want it back in the command zone. Now, why would you want to do that? It's so that you can cast it again, but every time you cast your commander from your command zone, no, the first one is normal cost is printed, and from then on, it costs an additional 2 generic mana to cast your commander. So the second time
this,
is cost plus
this,
2.
Third this accumulates.
Time. Yes.
So 2, 4, 6, 8, and so on.
Yeah, which means that if your general is getting hated enough, they may get to a point where you really can't cast them anymore, and that's sort of a downer. On the upside, it means your opponent probably blew all their removal.
Hmm.
Possibly. Who knows? Okay, so you understand the rules. Other than that, you know, it's a game of Magic.
Yeah, you're still playing the game of Magic, still things like one land a turn, and passing turns, and playing
normal multiplayer
creatures.
Rules. When a creature attacks, you declare which player or planeswalker it is attacking. There's no goofy rules about, like, spell range like you have in Emperor or whatever.
Yeah, there's none
you
of
just,
that.
You just target stuff. So that's it for the rules of play.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that we've covered everything about deck construction and selection and rules of play that are specific to the format. So honestly, from here, just like hop over to the ban list, figure out ban cards, and get going. But I think at this point, Medibot, you and I should take a sample legend and think about what deck we would construct with it and what it would look like and why. That'll probably be most instructive. So, can you spin us a wheel of legends and pick one out of the hat?
I'm going to hit random code until I get a legend.
Ooh, excellent.
Nope. Wrenchmind is not a creature of Veil of Secrecy.
Ooh, maybe I can help out.
Island is not a valid general, despite the fact that it's very powerful.
Crusade, not it. Nope. Oh, got one.
What you got?
I got Kong Ming Sleeping Dragon.
Alright.
That only took 4 tries to get a legend. I'm pretty happy. Alright, so Kong Ming Sleeping Dragon is from Portal 3 Kingdoms. He is 2 white and 2 colorless for a human advisor. He's a 2/2 and says other creatures you control get +1/+1.
Okay, so he's a dude packing an anthem.
Yeah, he's Mr. Glorious Anthem right there. Mm-hmm. And being in white means we get lots of token-creating effects. So we want the biggest ones possible. If we're really going to make the deck about Kong Ming, then we want things that make lots of soldier tokens and little, like, 1/1s. Okay? Yeah. But this is not an invitation to throw, like, every card you've ever seen that makes tokens in. Because cards have very important secret rules if they're going to fly in EDH. Basically, they have to be bigger than you're used to.
Yes.
More massive. More burly. So a token generator like Midnight Haunting would not be very good.
Token generator like Mobilization would work pretty well.
Mobilization would be pretty great. Let's see, Increasing Devotion? Probably big enough.
White Sun Zenith.
White Sun Zenith definitely makes the cut. It scales, for instance,
the Captain of the Watch.
To that end. Captain of the Watch, since it's a creature and we can reuse those, and it has 187, we definitely could. Definitely could do Captain of the Watch. She's pretty big, too.
Yeah.
Kind of burly. What else? What's one that we would, like, sneakily not include, even though it looks good enough? Maybe Conqueror's Pledge, come to think of it. That makes a lot of dudes. I mean, it's just not as good as the others. I mean, spending 5 to get 6 men is pretty good, and spending, 11 to get 12 men? It also looks good, but since we can't reuse that, like Increasing Devotion, and like White Sun Zenith, and like Mobilization, do you see where I'm coming from with this? Being able to reuse your things? We'd probably want something more like that. However, there is a certain category of cards that every deck should really have in it. And that's our artifacts and sweepers and stuff.
Yes.
So almost every EDH deck starts out with, Sol Ring and...
Fuck Sol Ring.
Yeah, I don't like Sol Ring in it. I really wish they would. It's too good. I mean, the difference between the player who starts out with Sol Ring and the player who doesn't is just absurdly massive. They've already banned it in 1-on-1s. There's a different banned list for duels, and it is banned there, which is, I don't know. But currently it's not banned, so it should go in every deck, because it's too damn powerful to disinclude, and takes the place of a land, and it's just strictly better than your basic land. Kong Ming Lord Sleeping Dragon here is going to only have planes, basically. Emira the Sky Ruin.
Yep.
Be a very good include in this. We would put in Caracas, except it's banned, so we can't. I can't think of any, maybe Karu. Honestly, like, Karu is not bad in the EDH. And Karu is the only Karu that we can run in this mono-white deck. What other artifacts? Oblivion Stone always goes in there. In a white deck, we might be able to get away without putting in all his dust, just because we have other sweepers in our color,
White has no shortage of sweeping effects. You have Wog, Dodge, Catastrophe, Rout. A white deck has no problem keeping the board clear of creatures, which, God, I love Mobilization.
In the almost mono planes deck, we could probably also get some of the lesser known white ramp effects going. Like, hold on. Can we do land tax? Yes.
Land tax is a pretty strong card, by the way.
You can put land tax in this deck. That's pretty crazy. Also, Gift of Estates, also Endless Horizons. And those should all go in. Since you're white, you should be running Path to Exile and Swords to Plowshares and Condemn. What else puts on the bottom? No, those are the big ones.
Ghostly Prison,
I guess.
Is just sort of good.
Yeah, Ghostly Prison is pretty good.
You know, I'm the jerk who loves to play, you know, the blue.
Windborne Muse is probably a better one. I mean, in this deck, you're probably not so concerned about your opponents not being able to attack you with an army. You just want to be able to attack with yours. So that's going to be the primary focus of the deck. Just always having that +1/+1 in reserve, so that, you know, just with a bunch of mono on the table and no cards at all in your hand, you can flash back your big token maker and then slam your general, and they're all bigger, and then have a good old time. Let's see, what else is in it? Solemn Simulacrum is pretty much in every deck. Coalition Relic would be, but this is a monocolor deck, so we don't
need
the fixing.
It's not quite as thrilling in monocolor, although it can still do neat tricks for you.
Yeah, I mean, it still accelerates you sometimes by two steps, in which case you probably want to put Darksteel Ingot in this deck, again, just for the acceleration and the indestructibility, actually, because there's a
indestructibility
a
is
of,
real in the format of EDH.
Yes, a lot of stuff flies around, and indestructibility adds a lot of burliness. Okay. Now, the reason that we build the deck this way is so that every single piece that you have in your 100 cards is somehow effective. It needs to be a powerful and effective card at almost any point in the game. So life doesn't really begin until turn 5. This doesn't mean that you can sit there and do nothing until turn 5. It means that in the early turns, you have to be building up to the bigger plays, and you have to get to 8 mana or so, so that you can compete with everybody else who is ramping up and then making big plays.
Typically, everyone does play defense for the first few turns, unless someone exposes themselves as faltering off the starting line, at which point everyone usually just tears them to shreds before the game really starts.
Yeah, somebody who misses a land drop or so, they're probably going to get their remaining land destroyed, and, well, then you're just
away
not
they
in
go.
It. Yeah, so, I mean, basically removing a player from the game right away, yeah, that's usually to your advantage. Of course, it also makes you a huge jerk.
Yes. Well, we'll get into that rule later.
Oh,
The other thing I wanted to say about deck construction is that if you just want to play a certain combination of colors for just other cards, other plans within those colors, and there's no general with that color combination that works with that plan, that's also okay.
Yes. You do have a number of 5-color generals available if you just need your plans available. So, what do we have? Chromat, Corona, Reaper King, Sliver Queen, Sliver Overlord. Was Sliver Legion a legend? I think it was.
Yes, it is.
Is he? Yeah, okay. So Sliver Legion. But yeah, basically you have a lot of choices for that. If you just want the colors. Oh, Progenitus.
Oh.
Sure, that would be that's the most stylish one. You should definitely go for Progenitus if you're going to go for a 5-color commander. And some playgroups will allow the Nephilim to count as legends for that, so you can kind of negotiate with your friends. If you have a really cool, like, 4-color deck concept, there are 5 Nephilim, each of which is a different combination of the 4 colors, so you can usually get away with negotiating that. I would go for it if you just really, really want to not play one single color. And I don't know. But yeah, that's how you build a white deck. Any given green deck needs to have ramp effects in it, and the bigger the ramp effect, the better. So Primeval Titan, very big, very good. He gets in there and here. What else do we have? Kodama's Reach and Cultivate, same card, but since they have different names, you can play both of them.
Yeah, Functional Reaper.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Even Rampant Growth sometimes makes it, as surprising as that sounds, and ineffective though it seems. Although, really, we're playing Sakura Tribe Elder. That's the better version of Rampant Growth for that, being easier to rebuy. Any green deck also needs
Yavimai Elder.
Yavimai Elder, Eternal Witness, Who do I see the kids playing? They play this one that's, like, pretty expensive, but you get to search for two basics. I forget what that one's called. It's, like, four mana. It's basically, like, two rampant growths stapled together on one card.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's pretty good in EDH. And so you use all these ramp effects to flood your side of the field with lands so that you can, like, play one gigantic thing and, like, go to town with it, and then after people solve that, you play another gigantic thing. So everything in green, and really in any color, that just looks too stupidly huge to be believed, this is the format where it goes.
Yes.
This is the format of Genesis Wave. Genesis Wave is the realest of cards in this format. You have no idea.
You will resolve it for 11, and all your opponents are just going to do this thing where they're sort of like chewing on their thumb knuckle and like, oh god, what's he going to
play? A lot of playgroups I've found don't like counter magic, but the better reaction to that is to play Baseju, play Vexing Shusher, play, I don't know, other threats before you run out your Genesis Wave. Then you Genesis Wave for like 10 or 11. And it's like, oh, look at that. I hit Ulamog and all of my lands. And now I get to use them. And it's like,
toast.
It's so silly.
So silly.
There are a lot of silly things that will happen, but don't get discouraged. Just be able to interact with them. So anything that steals your opponent's things, this is very good.
Stealing things, sweeping things, you want to be able to solve unsolvable problems, because this is a format where it is possible to play unsolvable problems.
You want things that somehow scale to the size of the problem at hand. So clones are very good as well, just like getting a copy of something. Sakshima the Imposter is really good. Sakashima can even copy their legends, their generals, and go to town there. I guess if you really don't want people playing their own generals, you could run Sabo Teyvok yourself, but that's a little too far to go.
That will usually really get you the wrong kind of attention.
Yeah, and by the time you're playing Sabo Teyvok, they're not smashing you with their general usually. Like, unless they're playing an unusually aggressive one, like Thraxamundar or Rafik of the Many, where the general himself is this really uniquely powerful set piece that you can just throw down and go. Unless they're playing someone like that, they're probably not really playing their general. To be honest, most people that I see just like wanted to play certain colors, and they're like, "Oh, well, this person works." Well, and it's kind of novel when you finally like cast your general. All of my EDH decks have red, and red is kind of the dog color in this format. Does not get a lot of love. Generally does not get the kinds of big spells and big effects that it needs. It does get sweepers, but of a different sort, usually with damage, usually costing way too much for what they do. Occasionally they are named Flame Wave, and that's nice. Sometimes they're named Chandra or Chandra or Chandra.
Sometimes you get the D-Force. And hey, we're getting a new one in 13.
A Worldfire?
Yeah.
Oh, I would definitely play a Worldfire. I want to get one of those.
If you're going to play red in EDH, embrace the redness of your red.
Yes.
Just,
I mean, maybe I want Obliterate instead, or honestly, preferably Decree of Annihilation.
Yeah.
I realize I'm name-dropping a lot of cards as we go on, but as an advanced listener, you should be pretty familiar with these, or at least have the tools available to be able to look them up.
Yes.
There are a number of forums available of varying goodness for you to look at.
Explore the local flora and fauna.
Yes.
The fauna that is contained within the flora.
Now, as to the secret rules
of
EDH.
The secret rules of EDH is that all of your opponents are big, whiny babies.
Yes.
They're
not going to
cry
whining.
A lot if you do anything other than let them just stomp all over everyone.
And that's wrong. Don't
give in to their whining.
It's just so much whining. Oh, boo-hoo. You countered my spell.
Number one way to get a target painted on your head in a game of EDH. Have blue in your general's color identity.
Yes.
It's like, oh, he's playing blue. He's going to counter a shit. Kill him.
This is a warning sign.
Yeah.
Even though, like, none of my blue decks actually have any counter spells anymore, it was just not worth
it. I only run counter spells that are creatures.
Yeah. It's just not worth it anymore to have counters. Because you're inherently doing a one-for-one with whatever, you know, my spell, your spell. That's not good enough for this format.
Your counter spell is named the Mystic Snake. You're talking.
That's fine. That's a dude. That does other things. You can rebuy that. You can bring him back from the grave with Eternal Witness.
Yeah.
You can
resurrect
him in other ways.
Blue gets a lot of hate on it, and for reasonably, you know, pretty good reason. It's because it's the color most likely to just steal all your permanents, then take 100 turns.
Yes, taking extra turns is a big, big thing in blue. And that means extra land drops, extra planeswalker activations, more card draw, probably drawing into things that allow you to rebuy your time warp and do the time warp again.
Oh yeah, that's another note. Like, in whatever color or colors you're playing, there's probably a good walker to play it.
I don't think that's the case at all.
You know?
No. Walkers are not very good in multiplayer formats, and very few walkers make the cut in EDH. Like, unless you're specifically taking extra turns, then the Planeswalker will just not do enough compared to other stuff that's going on. They're really great in duels, but they don't scale very well, or at least most of them don't scale very well. It is still perfectly okay to drop Koth of the Hammer, Nicol Bolas Planeswalker, or Karn Silver Golem, or whatever he's called. Karn Liberated, I guess.
Yeah, Karn Liberated.
Yeah, they're big enough.
I've had good results with Gary. So
well, Garruk is ramp.
Garruk, there you go. He counts as a ramp card most of the week, so.
So he's good for that reason.
That's on plan in green.
Yeah. Tamiyo would be perfectly fine.
If you can get, like, a crazy emblem out of your walker,
that's something. You're good.
Because basically all the emblems read, suck it down.
The thing about running Koth of the Hammer is that people understand how powerful his ability can be, and sometimes it's still not powerful enough. Like, that's, like, even just dumping all of my mountains every turn into damage is just not enough. This crazy format.
I mean, emblems being an uninteractable with thing.
That's kind of nice. Okay, so what are secret rules? If there's recursion, you should run it. And for that reason, you're also running graveyard hate.
Yes.
Just like
everyone needs some kind of yard hate. Crypt, relic, whatever.
Relic of Progenitus is a pretty popular one. It wipes everybody and cycles while you do it.
If you have a good one on color, take it. Green gets that goddamn slime that's $30.
Yeah. I mean, that slime came from the commander pre-cons.
Yeah, and it's
pre-cons.
Now you can't buy the goddamn deck, because everyone...
Yeah, now it's sold out everywhere.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Heck Yard Hate, because some jerk is just recurring all their shit every turn.
What is that black one? Wretched something? Withered Wretch?
Withered Wretch.
Withered Wretch.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. He's pinpoint removal, which is sometimes even better.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you'll pop your sweeper, and then they will, in response, pull something back, And with Wither Dretch, you're just like, okay, burn that one. And then they do something and respond by burning it again. And then, ha, got you. But that's pretty good. So you want to run Recursion. You want to run Yard Hate because everybody's running Recursion.
If you blow up lands, people will hate you.
Yeah, that's been pretty much my experience. But that's also the great equalizer.
Yes.
Like, that's on plan for me, or at least in Razia.
But
so I think we'll get to...
People will try a lot if you nuke even one of their lands.
Yeah, but they should deal with it.
They should.
Especially if that land is something like, oh, I don't know, Volrath's Stronghold, or Academy Ruins.
AKA something that actually deserves landy.
Yes.
Not just like, you blow up someone's basic, you're sort of rubbing it in.
Even Phyrexian Tower, I think is what it's called. I have the search tool
Cabal
right here.
Cabal Coffers? Yeah, nuke that.
Oh, jeez.
You're like, nope, not tonight.
Yeah, Phyrexian Tower
and
Cabal Coffers, both worthy of being killed as soon as you see them.
Basically, there are problematic lands in this format. Destroy them.
Yes. Have ways to interact with
them. When your opponent cries, give them the finger.
No respect. This is half of Magic.
What else? Let's see. What else?
Okay, well, we've covered stealing things.
Stealing things will also get people really mad at you.
Well, what? Again, don't care.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay, stealing things, Recursion, Graveyard Hate,
Sweet.
Ways to deal with lands, Baseju in general.
Yeah.
Good equipment. Like, a single creature that is very powerful is usually better than a whole lot of creatures that are sort of powerful. Just because, you know, if you have one problematic creature and they run out the sweeper, which they have in their deck because you should have those, then you just play the next one and, you know, they're back in the same hole.
They suit up.
So do the most you
good
can,
equipment,
the least
swords,
you can get away with.
They give protection from two colors. And
yes.
There you go.
People are obligated to run colors. And
if you're a jerk, you can scout out your opponent's decks ahead of time and run the correct swords. Thanks a lot for your one sword being Sword of Body and Mind, Mike.
Well, yeah, that's going to happen every now and again. I mean, I run Sword of Body and Mind because it's the only one I own.
Yeah, I think he proxied his, though.
Yeah, he did. Which,
is
a jerk move, and I personally do not proxy any cards. Ever. And
I'm
like
the opinion
practice.
That, like, basically proxies should not be allowed in EDH.
No, proxies should be for playtesting to figure out whether or not your deck works before you commit to buying something.
You know, throw down
and that's fine.
$300.
Right. And usually we do that more for, like, testing for Legacy, Standard, whatever, some more legitimate format. I consider an EDH deck like a project. Like, you pick a general that you like. And forget whether he's good or not. You know, you find one that's a legend, and you're like, this guy looks cool. This guy is somebody that I like. I'd like to cast this guy. And then put together some deck that does work, is valid in the rules of deck construction. And then from then on, just trade out cards for better cards when you get them. And turn it into more of a project. And that way you get some battle experience and your general, like, levels up over time. And gets better because he has access to better stuff. That way it makes it really fun and interesting, and it makes it a continual project, and then you have your little pet decks, and that's good. But proxying a whole bunch of things just to do it, that's scummy, and you should not tolerate it.
Just so you can put your goddamn sword on your ghost dad, and I can't do shit about it. Another important rule of deck construction that we forgot to mention is that your deck is required to have a name.
It definitely is.
And the name, in all cases, should, perhaps, must, be an anagram of your general's name.
So, continuing our example with Kong Ming Sleeping Dragon here, I'm going to take that to the Eye Rearrangement Servant. There we go. Which is an anagram for Internet Anagram Server, which is the real thing. So, let's see. Kong Ming Sleeping Dragon. And I'm going to throw on the advanced version of this filter, because this is an advanced cast. And I'm going to disinclude the word A, because it likes to give me a whole bunch of words that have A. This is a particularly long name, so the Internet Anagram Server is going to chew on it for a little while.
Ideas.
Kong Ming Sleeping Dragon. Yeah, that's a lot of grist there, and perhaps, well, okay. Ooh, add preening logging monks.
There you go.
Ooh, ooh. Oh, no. Add kennel gimping gorgons. That's pretty good. Let's see. Non-smoker is in there. Pennon is actually thematic. Like, Google add smirking Pennon. Oh, Goggle, not Google. Tag. Okay. So is Omen... I like that non-smoking is in there, so we're going to see what we can do by must include the word non-smoking. Non-smoking drape legging.
I mean, we could do this for a while, but what we're trying to communicate to you, dear reader, is that this is an opportunity to really let how brilliantly clever you are shine. You know, bonus points if your name is thematically associated with your general or your plan somehow, or is just exceptionally surreal.
Surreal is good. Apt is good.
Yes. I think it is Orio Soratami Ascendant is still banned as a general, but I dare say there will not be anything that out-apts it, because that anagrams to an anti-caster sodomy area.
Yes, I was rather pleased to run that deck. I really liked the deck.
And
it was not too busted, because
it really isn't.
Just,
I didn't get mad.
People just—they just didn't understand how ultimately bad it was to have a flipped Orio. Because first of all, you have to spend a bunch of cards to get it flipped, and then, you know, you're basically making players discard one thing a turn until somebody solves it. Which they do very rapidly, because they have splashed enchantment hate in whatever. And it becomes, like, priority one for everybody at the table to get out from under Orio lock. And then there's also uncounterable things. It just... ugh. The reason Orio got banned is because the HNIC of this format is just some random duder named Sheldon. Sheldon Mineri?
Yeah.
I think it is? Yeah. And it's just him. There's not an official, like, Wizards board. They don't... I mean, they just leave it in his hands. And his pet deck is, what's his name?
Crush the Blood Braided.
Yeah, Crush the Blood Braided. And anything that beats that gets banned.
Yes.
So, the, you know...
Any combo gets banned.
We are under the thumb of a rather fickle and kind of a jerk tyrant. But, yeah, you're not going to beat an anti-caster sodomy area.
It's just real good.
Man, did I love that. I am sad to see the deck go, but I think that I'm still allowed to play the card, so we might... Yeah, Orio is banned as a commander, but not as a card, so I could still put her into one of my other decks.
Get in there.
I probably will, just to... Ooh, yes, now that I have, like, kind of a Moonfolk plan going on, I wanted to try out a moonfolk plant, so Oryo should go back in. She's a pretty good moonfolk.
It's on the moon.
Mm. So yes, you have to have a cool name for your deck.
Well, at least like a pretty okay name.
You have to disrespect your opponents and make them have answers to your stuff.
Yes.
Oh, and if they want to like change the numbers on cards, so for instance, Soren Markov and there's a there's like a Sphinx that sets your life total to 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
And like some other cards will interact with your life total. Also, what is that? What is that cat thing? Felidar Sovereign.
Yeah.
Okay. So all of these cards refer to life totals by a number, and that number is balanced around starting at 20 life. So starting at 40 life, this suddenly is a huge, huge difference. And all these cards are much more powerful in this format, because Soren Markov suddenly takes off a way huger chunk of life when he sets you to 10. Felidar Sovereign threatens to win the game right away. If he's not answered, he can just run away with it. Sarah Ascendant is a turn 1 6/6 lifelink. And that's pretty good. But the thing is, you have to have answers for these things. Just make people have answers. There are sweepers. There's plenty of life gain. This is the format of big, stupid effects. Nothing about these cards is that broken that you need to tweak with the numbers to make them like more sensible or better or whatever. You just don't need to. Play with cards as printed. Play with real cards. You'll have a much richer experience for it. Rather than, you know, playing Felidar Sovereign and then asking everybody if we're playing to 80 because that's double your starting life, or 60 because that's 20 more than you started with. There's no clear-cut answer to these unless you just accept the fact that, okay, sometimes somebody is going to play a Plains and have a turn 1 6/6 lifelinker. I think that's perfectly fine.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically okay. The thing, this format, like all multiplayer formats, has this interesting sort of self-balance where if you look like you're getting off the starting block a bit fast, the other three players will be happy to put you back in your place.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you play that Plains into Sarah Ascendant, and you're now playing a 1-3 for a while.
Yeah.
Probably. So, hope you have some backups to that. And you might just get it nicked from you. I mean, you're probably going to gain some life. That's
most
kind of
likely.
You'll ultimately trade with a card, be a little bit ahead on life. It's a pretty strong play. It's by no means out of control or busted. It's good.
And again, you know, you have one of it in your 100 card deck. If you really want to, you can try and, you know, sculpt down to it. It'll still usually not happen.
All right, so Medibot, you played in a tournament.
Oh, yes, I did.
EDH.
Let me tell you how goddamn stupid I was to waste my time and money on this tournament.
Well, come on, you had fun.
Sort of?
I know that you did.
It was
pretty good. You were smiling and telling me about the experience after you had done it.
Well, that's because I did that thing that I shouldn't have been able to do, but I did.
Okay, disrespect your opponent. They have to know. They have to be able to...
I was surprised that,
The problem.
Okay, so the way this tournament worked is that, like, everyone just signs up, and then there are games. They just pair you up into four-person groups, and they're all just last man standing. But here's the sort of funny part, is that, it's like, you get points based on the order you went out, so if you're the last guy, you get the most points. If you're the second-to-last guy, you get a smaller number of points, whatever. But then, they do this wacky thing at the end of the game where everyone votes on which other player they liked the best, and then they get points. And typically, if you win, other players won't like you, because you probably beat their ass by stealing every creature on the board with your amazing combo deck.
Or taking 10 turns in a row, wasting all of their time.
Yeah. But it's totally okay that one guy brought the game to a screeching halt with his Quicksilver Fountain so that no one did anything for 12 turns. That's cool.
That ain't cool. Actually, that sounds kind of like
what ended up happening is, you know, this is a four-person format, and I got... And there was also a rule that, like, when you went to time, they'd put a emblem Armageddon clock, basically, on the field to just make people die. So in the four games that I played, in two of them, I was the last guy alive. In the other two, I was the second-to-last guy alive.
Hmm.
And that seems like a pretty strong performance, you know, in four-player games. That's, you know, two outright wins and two sort of wins. However, people generally didn't like my deck. People liked other people's decks. I couldn't figure out what they were voting for and why. It really made no sense. It seemed kind of random, and I ended up not getting any prizes. And then, you know, people getting prizes did a lot worse than me. Some of them won no games, but got enough friendship points to get prizes. I was kind of salty about that, because I beat their asses. You saw it happen. You saw me resolve my Experiment Crudge. Shoutouts to Experiment Crudge.
The main jerk expert.
The main jerk expert. And my devoted druid. And then I get my... what's that idiot elf called?
What, Bloomtender?
No, the one who gives you +1/+1 counters.
Oh,
Immaculate Magistry.
Immaculate Magistry.
Yeah, and I get those, and like, the guy who goes before me finishes his turn, I'm like, okay, end of your turn, I'm going to cord for 4. And, you know, everyone's like, okay, you know, sure. And I'm like, okay, put in Immaculate Magistry. I'm like, and everyone's like, oh, okay. And I'm like, okay, I'm trying to real hard to play it cool here. Because I have just assembled a combo, you see, of the Crudge and the Magistrate.
Counter on Immaculate Magistrate?
I'm like, okay, I'll go to my, you know, beginning of combat step. Is that okay with everyone? I was like, okay. I'm like, okay, you know, I've got my +1/+1 counter on Devoted Druid already. So Crodge can be Devoted Druid. And I find some guy with no creatures in play. Well, he had, like, just, you know, some tiny utility creature in play. And I'm like, okay, I attack you with Experiment Crodge. He's like, no blocks, I take 4. I say, hold on a second. And then my hands move around really fast, and then he's out of the game. And everyone else sort of looks at me, and they're like, wait, you can do that an unlimited number of times? And I said, yes, I can do that an unlimited number of times. They really didn't like me for my arbitrarily large ooze monster. If you let me assemble my super fragile 3-card creature combo, maybe I beat you. Maybe I am the winner. Another guy straight up doing fucking Squirrelcraft.
Yeah, like straight Earthcraft up. Squirrel Nest. Come on.
And like,
not only is that easier to assemble and more busted, it's also less inspired. It's not cool.
It's less cool. So I taught him a lesson by getting my Infinity Engine with Crodge on the board. I'm playing, I don't know, Cytoplasm Manipulator?
Oh, jeez.
And, you know, I say, you know, I attack you with Crodge, and he's like, I make 100 squirrels. I'm like, okay, I steal all of them during my declare attack step. And he's like, I make 100 more. I'm like, okay, those are mine too. He's like, no, I want to block with squirrels. I'm like, you can't block with your squirrels. And he's like, no, you have to stop, because I make all my squirrels, and then we go to declare blocks. I'm like, no, you make all your squirrels, and then I take all your squirrels, and then we go to declare blocks. And he got really upset that I beat his 2-card infinite with my 4-card infinite. And no one voted for me again. I don't know. Then the other, I didn't do quite so much busted stuff in all of my games. Some of my games I was just, you know, playing with just good blue and green stuff going on.
That probably had more to do with how you presented your combo and stuff than with what actually happened. I mean, what they're reacting to is the feeling that they lost because they were surprised. You know, they didn't feel like they should have lost or that you did beat them. Because it's like, oh, well, I just didn't know that. And what they're not realizing is that's on them.
Yeah.
You have to be able to see this
stuff. These are cards in the game of Magic.
If someone is playing a card that you are not familiar with, that you haven't heard of, that is itself a big red flag that says, this guy has this card for some reason. I haven't heard of this, and it's very unusual. So why does he have it? Figure out why.
Or just kill it.
You know, after in time, I have trained my playgroup to stop me from doing things that they don't understand. When I cast Kickered Sadistic Sacrament targeting myself, that draws a counterspell.
Yeah.
Because no one understands why I would do that, but they don't want me to do it. They don't want to figure it out.
If they let you do it, it's probably too late.
Because the last couple times...
And this is a good thing to be doing in your EDH deck construction going back.
Yeah, every last time that people have gone, I don't know what you're doing, so let's watch you do it. It's ended badly. They've been like, holy shit, what is this? Weird interaction. So that's why I play Cedrus, the Traitor King.
Yeah.
There are a lot of really wacky and open-ended combo kind of stuff that you can do in red, black, blue. And Cedrus is a deck that I have crammed full of all of them.
Similarly,
last thing that I can find.
Experiment Crotch basically says open combo piece right on the text box.
Yes.
He is my general, and I'm full of stuff that works with him and then works with other things and lets me do things far more often than I really should be allowed to. And I set up these goofy situations where my Glenlendra Archmage somehow can never actually die forever. And, you know, I keep just tapping all my creatures and then untapping them. And then, no, you can't attack me because I blow up all things forever except for the one on my head. And then I'm the only one with a hat, so I win. Because this is what blue likes to, you know, do that in general. But I like Crotch a lot because of his open-ended nature, because he can work well with any of your ability creatures and any of your opponent's ability creatures.
Yep.
He's just like, if you have a good ability creature, Crotch is here, and he has a message for you, and you are not going to like it. And he's a big purple blob, and I love him. I love you, Experiment Crotch.
He was made to evolve.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What's he going to do next? I don't know. They print new cards, and he can do more stuff.
Yeah, Cedrus scales pretty well. I'm sorry, not Cedrus. Experiment Crotch scales really well. My other favorite is Razia, Boros, Archangel. All of my EDH decks end up being red. I'm like, oh, I have red cards. Cram, cram, cram. But Razia is good because she has more sweepers than anybody. And I unashamedly run Catastrophe, which is the best sweeper. Oh, I run a second copy of it in Razia's Purification.
Yeah.
It's nice, nice, nice. Catastrophe says each player chooses a creature, an artifact, an enchantment, and a land, and sacrifices all of their permanents they control. So you get to keep those four things, or if you enchantment or a land. Cataclysm.
Oh, okay.
Not Catastrophe.
Yeah, I got it mixed up.
Yeah. So, yeah, it sets everyone, importantly, back to one land. So all you have to do is make sure that you have the biggest, baddest creature on the battlefield, and then resolve that, and you basically ride for the rest of the game, and it doesn't matter if your opponents put 30 additional lands onto the battlefield and got just super ahead of you. It doesn't matter if they drew 25 cards and just finished their 7th extra turn. Because they only have one land left, and you have a bigger badass of a creature. Usually Razia herself, who wins fights a lot.
Yeah, she's quite powerful. She's good at fighting and winning.
She has haste. Haste is very important on a general who plans on attacking, ever. Swiftfoot Boots and Lightning Greaves go into EDH decks.
Generically good includes.
And that's also the reason that you have Artifact Destruction in your deck.
Yes.
Of some kind. You should have that. So, yeah. Oh, right. What else does Razia do? Everything else that Razia does is some kind of hate card for the format. It tries to, like, force people to play fair with all the busted stuff that they're doing. And so, usually, I'll have a couple of permanents down on the battlefield, and everyone else is just staring at me. They're like, and they try to do something, and I say, nope, can't. What do you mean? And I hold up my card that says, they can't do that.
I set it down. I'm sorry, did you not read Stranglehold?
I have almost every card with the word can't on it in that deck. It's just, if it's in white and red and has the word can't on it, it goes in Razia. Bam. Easy.
EDH is such a beautiful format. You can do all of these idiotic things, and then idiotic things to beat equally idiotic things, and just get stupid and funny.
There's honestly...
Never play it for prizes.
Yeah, no, that's just
That was my mistake,
right,
is, like, investing in it, and then succeeding.
I mean,
and then
honestly, you were...
Feeling cheated.
You were kind of exposed to an economics experiment more than anything else.
Yeah. You want to win, but in a way that other people like.
Which apparently is Palancron High Tide. What the hell is that?
Like, a guy does that, and it's like you're still voting for him?
You're
Am I not being creative enough with my, like, 8 blue-green creatures over here doing my little juggling act? And, like no.
See, that's the thing. They didn't like that because it was too complex for them to understand. They can understand Palancron High Tide because it's only 2 things, and it takes a second to explain, and the outcome is that you have unlimited blue mana.
Mine takes, like, 3 seconds to explain, and the outcome is that Kraj now has 100 power.
But no, because they have to read cards that they've never seen before. I mean, they barely understand how Kraj works. Come on. Honestly. That's the problem. They just didn't know.
Target creature gets a hug. All creatures that have been hugged will teach Kraj their trick. I'm just giving your creature a hug. I gave your creature a +1/+1 counter.
Explaining it.
I don't see what you're so upset about. By the way, I own your creature.
Hugs come at a price.
Maybe they want to be on the hugging side for once. Oh, also if you're playing red, play Insurrection.
Oh, yes. Just yeah, there are some other cards that you'll find that'll be like, oh, if you resolve this, you win the game, and you should definitely play each of those. If you're in white, you're playing Stormherd for that reason. Looks pretty good in Kong Ming.
Ugh, nuts.
Or should I say, ragged, non-smoking Glen Pie?
It's good because I'm confused by it.
Oh, no. No. This is the best one. You will like this. Dangle non-smoking pig-erg.
Pig-erg? You can't... Is pig-erg legal in EDH?
Actually, we might be able to do pig-egg. Let's see what I can do with non-smoking...
What can we get with pig-egg?
Non-smoking pig-egg. Darn, El Non-Smoking Pig Egg. Well.
La Non-Smoking Pig Egg Nerd. That doesn't work as well because La is feminine and Kong Ming is shown to be male.
Yeah.
So L works better.
I guess we could kind of erase the mustache, maybe. I don't know.
Well, I think at this point, the world is ready to, you know, go and throw your little EDH commando deck together.
Yeah, and by all means, I can't, like, restate this enough. Just, like, bone up on the rules of the format. Choose a legend who is cool that you like and build that deck from the cards that you have. And then make it a project.
Yeah.
You'll have a lot more fun doing that. And, I mean, presuming you already have, like, a play group of some kind, or maybe, like, your friends like Commander, and maybe you can all, like, get into it together, and that would be pretty good, too.
We'll play with the idiots at your local shop and never play Paper Moon.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's kind of the downside. You should never really, like, play Paper Magic, so this is all academic at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there's online...
Yeah,
but, EDH. You can do Commander online. You can.
Really, the only online format for me these days is Mojosto, but that's for another time.
Well, yes, that is definitely a different format and the one that we can do another time. So, is there anything else you wanna wrap up with, Medibot?
EDH is a format where anything goes. You're going to cry about it. You're going to cast some spells about it.
You should cast some spells, and you should keep it in your skulls.
Skulls.